Buddha, Shri Dharma, Shri Sangha. We're now on the explanation of the fifth column. We're getting very close to the end of the original book. Now, this is on page 151. Before I talk about the fifth column, before I start reading this, talking about it, I want to point out a couple things about the fourth column. If we go back to our talking about need, spiritual need, and the help of the eternal, in the first column, you have the need looking towards the help. The need turning towards the help. In the second column, you have the need presented to the help. Offered to the help. In the third column, you have the need arriving at the help. The help arriving to the need, you might say, the meeting of the two. And in the fourth column, and this is the amazing thing, you have need turning into help. That's what happens when merit is made. It's a trance, when the trance, the spiritual conversion happens, the gradient illusion, they actually transform into aspects of enlightenment. And their Buddha nature of greed, hate, and delusion is revealed. And then that merit becomes a means of picking up more need down at the bottom of the circulation and helping it rise up, get enlightened, and then that too becomes merit. So you have this continual circulation, and that is the true meaning of the Bodhisattva path. You take all the driver's seatishness out of it that people put out of their somewhat misguided good intentions. You put on it, and that is really the meaning. That when you give body and mind into the hands of the eternal in pure meditation, and you do the best you can to live by the true spirit of the precepts, then the true bodhisattva act is happening. It's not your act. It's the marriage of your willingness with the grace of the eternal. Which then allows the conversion to happen, makes the merit that comes out and can pick up more of the need get its help. This happens on so many levels. So often the focus is on the most externalized level, and that's where it tends to get very driver's seatish. But if you keep it much closer to the actual work of training, then you can really see what's happening. And as I've said so many times, the Reverend Master was always very pragmatic, as was the Buddha, keeping it really close to actual experience. That's, of course, the amazing thing about how to grow lotus blossom. You don't have a book of theory, you have a book of actual experience. Every point is proved true before it's made. The other point I wanted to make was that you remember that in the first column, when we talked about the first column, I talked about that whole being asking, where your whole being is turned towards the eternal and asking, where that prayer for help comes right out of your heart, right out of your body. It's just kind of all coiled up in there waiting to get locked on to the right target to shoot itself at. That cry comes out of the heart. That longing comes out of the heart. And when at last it's fixed on the eternal, through pure meditation, then we get going then. We're off and running. Well, the fourth column is the same kind of thing in listening. It's the whole being listening to the eternal. That's our part in the fourth column, the whole being listening. Again, just another aspect of pure meditation. And in doing that, we are truly then open for the compassion and wisdom of the eternal to pour in and to get to all the nooks and crannies. We're putting up no obstacle. In other words, you remember the fountain metaphor for the fourth column, that pouring of the fountain down, raining of the fountain of compassion and wisdom. Think of that whole being listening as total receptivity. Total receptivity. A wide open heart to the eternal. So Rin Master goes on to talk now about the fifth column, the Buddha within. She says, "The newborn Buddha stands within the golden lotus within my hara, in the center of the column of light that is composed of the five light columns," that one column of which all five are aspects. "His right hand points upward and his left down, signifying the oneness of heaven and earth." Help and need, just two aspects of one reality. We really learn that in two ways. One of them is pure intuition. The other one is actually experiencing help turning into need. I mean, need turning into help, sorry. She says, "The fifth column of light enters my forehead, passes down through my body and out and down. Thus it becomes the axis of the universe in which the Buddha sits." Think of that, what it feels like when you sit truly upright in meditation. There is that sense of uprightness and solidity, incredible solidity. And that's not just a physical sense, that's a spiritual sense. Mind and body are one. That's why it's so important to really sit upright, a relaxed uprightness, the physical posture in meditation. She says, "Sometimes when all seems dark, I look up through the tiny hole in the first column to ask the help of the Lord. Sometimes I wash myself clean of delusion in the second column, Sangha." And we present, this is the first time, I believe, that she's actually referred to the second column as Sangha. It's really the deeper meaning of Sangha. Whenever we really present the need, whatever it is, to the eternal, without judgment, and with an open heart, then that really is the essence of Sangha. She says, sometimes I am the emanation from the cosmic Buddha in the third column so that others may be helped. We can all be used in that way by the Eternal if self is not in the way. We can all be used to point the way. And 99.99% of the time, if we're used in that way, we don't know it. When I was a young monk, I remember once our master talking about transmission. She said, well, you know, people think of transmission as just like the ceremony or the kind of formal side of things. But she said, really, you know, you can be chopping the carrots and be doing the transmission. If self is out of the way, if we're just acting from the Buddha, as Dogen says, when the Buddha does all and we follow that doing effortlessly, when that is happening, then we can be used by the Eternal to point the way for others. And that is one of the meaning of the third column. In addition to, you know, the Eternal helping us, helping our own spiritual need. The meeting, the happy meeting of our spiritual need and the compassion and wisdom of the Eternal. She says, sometimes I bathe and am refreshed in the fountain of the Lord's love. And always I am still in my own place, the Hara, the place where heaven and earth, body and mind are one. That is the fifth column, pure meditation. The natural meditation, everything in this latter part of How to Grow Lotus Blossom has to be understood from the non-driver seat point of view. So whereas earlier in the book, at the beginning of the book, meditation is what one does. At this point, and it still has that aspect, but now there is the meditation that we do is actually happening within a much greater context of meditation understood to be the natural, unobstructed activity of Buddha nature. As I used to say to the congregation in the early days in this temple, I said, you know, sometimes I meditate and sometimes the meditation does me. There's no actual proper grammatical way to express what I'm trying to express there, but that's about as close as I've ever been able to come. When we're still in our own true place, the Hara, that's where we experience the stillness of meditation, is in the Hara. Of course, it's both within and out and without us. It's transcends all limitations. She says that she calls it the place where heaven and earth, remember, help and need, body and mind, meaning especially here, body representing karma, mind representing Buddha nature, are one. She says, this fifth column binds all together, heaven, earth, body, mind, darkness, light. Then she quotes from the Sandokai, within all light is darkness, but explained it cannot be by darkness that one sided is alone. In darkness there is light, but here again by light one sided it is not explained. She says, the Sandokai is a detailed explanation of the fifth column. It's actually more than that. You know, the Sandokai is an incredibly digested description of what River Master is describing at much greater length and more experientially, in more experiential detail in this book. The Sandokai is about the coming together and harmonizing of need and help. Sandokai literally translates as the harmonization of the relative and the absolute. or the phenomenal and the principle. They get these kind of philosophical, highfalutin sounding translations, but it just means the harmonization of our spiritual need, our karmic need, with the eternal. Bringing our coming into alignment with the eternal through the process of spiritual conversion, the process of training. Whenever she spoke of dark and light in this way, Reverend Master always emphasized, again, a very pragmatic individual, Reverend Master, always emphasized the light as being like the spiritual brightness and the dark as being like the spiritual darkness. And there's also the interpretation, which is really actually the same thing in a different way of looking at it. It's exactly the same thing in a different way of looking at it, where the light is the all is different and the darkness is the all is one. So when the Chandokai says, within all light is darkness, and in darkness there is light, within the all is different is the all is one. Within the all is one is the all is different. And yet they cannot be scrunched into each other so that there's no distinction. All is one and all is different. And all is one and all is different are two aspects of one reality. For all is different, again, you can read me and all of us and the whole world and its spiritual need. For all is one, you can read the eternal, the help of the eternal. And for the unity of all is one and all is different, everything that is of the eternal. And we need to train ourselves to truly know that. She says, this fifth column is the stem of the lotus. Remember, the stem of the lotus is the means by which enlightenment happens. Training itself. She says, it is the physical body, the means by which man may know the Lord. You cannot, in Buddhism, you cannot separate the physical body from Buddha nature. This is something that the Buddha realized in his enlightenment, and that really was a great change from the religion which he was practicing up until his enlightenment. In that view, the spirit or the soul, the Atman, is imprisoned in the body, and the body is unclean. It is the manifestation of clinging, and its longings are the manifestation of uncleanness. So you have to conquer the body through ascetic practice in that way of thinking. And when you do that, then when you die, the Atman, the soul, is freed from its illusion, freed from greed and clinging. And it can return to Brahma, the world soul, and be reunited, be one with the world soul. So ascetic discipline was intended to master the body and its longings. So you endure things that are painful and difficult. And the Buddha actually found, well, that actually ends up, the logical conclusion of that is that you kill yourself in the process. And he had the good sense to realize that this was not actually getting him closer to the real, a real freedom from suffering. And that's when he took nourishment and sat down and simply started practicing acceptance, true meditation. Not just discipline, but acceptance. All acceptance. And that's when his enlightenment was able to happen. So to say, as our master, is the physical body is itself the fifth column. To say that this body is itself Buddha. And if we treat it as such with respect, and we treat its needs as being the needs of Buddha, not just an obstacle, then we can work with the body in our training. Instead of simply being stuck in a war with the body. Kind of like America's war on drugs. That asceticism is kind of like the war on drugs. It means well, but you have to look at, is there actually a practical result that is really desirable? And the answer is, well, it just goes on and on and on. It doesn't really solve the problem. One can understand why people take that point of view and make that effort. It's a tremendous effort. But in the end, if the effort ain't working, well, then you got to do something that does work. And the Buddha found the way, the middle path. It actually does work. How to work with the body, have compassion for the body. And by that means, come to genuine enlightenment, which sees that the body and indeed the whole stream of karma contains not a single speck of dust. There is no uncleanness. No real and final uncleanness. We can make our mind dirty temporarily. When we see evil where evil doesn't exist. When we stop doing that, we see there is nothing from the first. No speck of dust from the first. She says, she quotes Dogen, "Your body is deeply significant," says Dogen Zenji. "It is by its means that I may know the Lord. My body suffers when I do not know the way to the cessation of suffering. It is the right use, a training use of body and mind, which is the way to the cessation of suffering. What exquisite things are this body and mind? The root of the universe is exemplified therein." This is this is one of the great things about Soto Zen training. Soto Zen training makes detailed use of body and mind through meditation, through ceremonial, through the attitude with which we go about our daily activity. Makes positive use of the very thing within which all this karmic need is stored. It's kind of hoisting yourself up by your own bootstraps, really. And this is why, in the end, until we learn to really turn towards the eternal and ask for help, it doesn't quite get off the ground. Because it is hoisting ourselves up by our own bootstraps. And we need that extra assistance. Then when we get that, when our cry for help rises up to the eternal, then we get a helping hand and we get lifted up, as it were. Then body and mind become the field of enlightenment, not the obstacle. We'll stop there for today, friends. Shuddha Buddha, Shuddha Dharma, Shuddha Sangha.